Welcome back to another episode of The Witch Doctor, a serial fiction podcast brought to you by me, Equanimous Rex. Since the last episode, I've seen a jump in how many people are listening. This is great news, and I'm excited that you've chosen to listen to the podcast. However, I'm a little concerned that some people are not familiar with the format of the show. That is, it's a sequential storytelling serial fiction. I've noticed a lot of downloads on the latest episode, and if you come to this one first, I just want to clarify. If you start out here, you're probably going to have some questions. But hey, you do you. I certainly can't complain. However, all of the episodes are linked sequentially, so if you find yourself tuning in and not being able to understand what the hell is going on, try starting at episode 0, Introduction, and work your way back up. I'll admit, the production quality of the podcast has gotten better over time, and the earlier episodes are a little rough around the edges. But hey, if you're new here, there are plans in the works to re-record the episodes with a larger cast of voice actors, sound effects, and hopefully some original music. If you want to follow The Witch Doctor, I have a writer's page on Facebook, actually, where I post related graphic art, teasers, and snippets from The Witch Doctor universe, in addition to my non-fiction articles published on various websites, and of course, the occasional dank meme. You can find me under Equanimous Rex, spelled EQUANIMOUSREX, or you can try searching for hashtag witchpunk. Hopefully, I can put up new podcast cover art that includes my name, so it'll be easier for you to locate and I won't have to keep spelling it out, because nobody wants to deal with that. Anyway, we left some of our protagonists in a rather shocking situation the last time, and now we shift our sights, once again, upon Noel and its inhabitants. Thank you for listening. The Witch Doctor, Episode 20, Mare. The rabbit awoke in a dark place. This should not have been surprising to the rabbit, whose kind were known to burrow and dig, and yet, at the same time, it was. The rabbit, wide-eyed and suspicious, twitched its nose and looked around at its environment. Some kind of sewer system, perhaps? A drainage pipe? It did not know how it knew these words, but it did. And though there were no discernible light sources, the rabbit could see clearly, if perhaps a little dimly, the outlines of concrete walls, which gave way to cylindrical tubes which gaped monstrous, as if seeking to swallow the poor thing alive, many times its height, and seemingly endless. The rabbit hopped around in a little circle, trying to get a better view of its surroundings. There was no sense of damp, as one might expect in such a circumstance. Everything was bone dry and gave the impression of muted neutrality. The concrete, the rabbit saw, was not concrete at all, but smooth gray stone. There were four tunnels leading out of the room, one for each of the stone walls. The rabbit scurried to and fro, rising up on its back legs and inspecting the tunnel mouths. Each one looked identical to the other, except that, as the rabbit saw now, they each bore a small engraving at the foot of their respective openings. The engravings were symbols or glyphs of a kind that the rabbit did not know, being that the rabbit was only capable of reading or speaking in English. a fact which dawned on the small, furry mammal as being rather odd. The etchings, being equally mysterious to the poor chap, were no help at all in spurring him forward, so he chose a tunnel at random, a symbol like a hybridized question mark and spiral marking this one, and started off down the tunnel. The tunnel was as dark as the rest of them had seemed, and the rabbit hopped its way down for what felt like hours, stopping here and there to raise up on its hind legs and smell at the air, trying to catch the scent of predators. But there was nothing. The stone beneath the rabbit's paws felt neither cold nor warm, and this disconcerted him more than the strange conditions he had woken up in, though exactly why he couldn't have told you. After an indeterminable time, the rabbit noticed that the tunnel was beginning to grow brighter, light filtering in through the gloom further down. With the light also came a narrowing of the earthen shaft, and soon the tunnel was not much bigger than the rabbit himself. Abandoning its cautious hopping, it bolted forward, back scraping against the stone, desperate now to get free of this strange place, eager to feel fresh air on its face. The tunnel, though it had seemed infinite, did end, its exit opening up to a verdant meadow, and the rabbit was put at ease now, with cool dirt beneath its feet and open sky above.
"God damn, it's good to be out,"
the rabbit said in a man's voice, startling itself. It was about this time that the rabbit realized it was not a rabbit at all, but a man. There was no phantasmagoric transmutation, no bone-crunching shape-shifting or miraculous alteration. It was simply that where before had been a small brown rabbit, there was now a fully grown adult man. Chester Smith, known to his friends and fellow Noelites as Chet, stood up from a crouching position and turned to look back at the crawl space he had just wormed his way through, seeing that it jutted out from a small hill, and that he was now far too large to go back into it.
"Okay, weird,"
Chet muttered, looking around the meadow, looking up at a sunless yet bright blue sky, dotted with a handful of big, fluffy clouds. The meadow was full of wildflowers and grass. A calming breeze tousled the plant life, causing the green which surrounded Chet to sway and move in a hypnotic fashion, and the man found himself entranced. Chet only looked up when a passing cloud dampened the light, and he saw that what were previously cotton-white clouds were now a dark, menacing gray. Fat drops of rain started to fall upon the plains, and the wind gusted suddenly vicious. Lightning flashed, blinding Chet for a moment. He covered his eyes with his forearm as thunder rocked the firmament beneath his feet, shaking him as if he was a mouse in the maw of a bloodthirsty tomcat. Chet stumbled and promptly fell on his ass. He gazed up at the stormy skies, and the clouds began to part above him. When the clouds began to part, Chet's eyes bulged, his mouth hung agape. Above him, looming with gargantuan and unfathomable size, was a disembodied eye turned towards him. The pupil shrank as it focused on his position, and Chet screamed inside his head, his mouth and throat frozen in the sublimity of the sight, the minimization of his own personage. He shrank against the enormity of the singular organ. Bile rose in his guts, and he vomited without taking his eyes from the one in the sky. Instead of rancid digestive leavings, what left his mouth were legions of mice and lost teeth. Chet put a hand to his now bare gums in horror, staring still at the celestial phenomena above. The pupil narrowed still, now twitching with exertion. What would have been invisible at the level of Chet's own instead rippled and jerked in massive waves, clearly visible from the wind-battered grass surrounding him. A pinpoint of light, like a singular star shining bright in a vast void, began to grow in the center of the pupil. The light's intensity grew, and as it did, Chet saw that the ground around him began to brighten, and as it brightened, he felt lighter, nauseous, and started to float upwards. It took a moment for Chet to fully register that he was being pulled towards the eye and the light. About a foot above his former position, the man spun and started clawing at the ground, his arms still within reach. Chet grasped at the grass and stones embedded in the dark, rich soil beneath, but everything crumbled away or relinquished its grip on the world without argument. The grass felt like strands of hair in his hands, snapping at the slightest twitch, offering no leverage against the horror of inability, of inescapable ascendance. Before he had a chance to realize the futility of his grasping, Chet was already out of reach of terra firma, of salvation from his weightless prison. The speed at which he rose increased, and the world underneath him sank until it was merely abstract. Blotches of greens and browns and shades of all kinds, further and further out of his reach. Chet, suddenly appreciative of the force that drew him towards itself, tried turning to face the heavenly optic, forced to swing his arms and twist his legs to manage a spin without grounding. He instantly wished he hadn't. Now, at this range, all that he could see before him was an abyss of utter totality. Chet started flailing, twisting, turning, trying to look back at the now inevitably lost prairie. Anything was better than facing the lacking that he was headed towards. But it did no good. Soon Chet was hurtling through the darkness, even the world below fading in its depth. All sense of acceleration left him, and Chet now hung in a darkness all-encompassing. Time escaped him, his chronesthetic sense utterly failing to nail down the ticking seconds of clocks that no longer existed, not in the unplace he found himself in. For countless aeons, he hung there, bereft of stimuli, bereft of sensory perception, bereft of novelty or newness or flux. The chaos of non-existence roared around him silently, and after millennia had passed, Chet began to crack up.
"I don't want to be alone,"
he screamed without a voice. Putting a hand to his face, he realized that he no longer possessed any lips, nor mouth, nor face, no hands with which to grasp. He was nothing, in nothing, forever. Then Chet woke up, his back to the damp, cool forest floor of the wilder. The memories of his tracking and searching rushed back to him, and he sat up in a hurry, which caused him to fall back to the ground, his ribs shooting pain throughout his entire body. Carefully now, he managed to rise, getting back on his feet, knowing that he had encountered, what, a person? An enemy? Someone, he felt sure, but who, he could not tell. The flashlight he had secured to his hat was still active, shining its dull red beams up into the trees. It had become disheveled in his fall. Chet adjusted it to a more useful position, and looked around for his rifle, sure that whoever had jumped him must have stolen it. Some free gatherer who just wandered too close to the town and had seen an opportunity. Chet wanted to believe it was not the kidnapper.
"Opportunity makes the thief,"
Chet recited to himself, recalling one of his grandfather's favorite sayings. Looking around, he did spot the gun, leaned up against the same pine tree where it had stood before he had been knocked unconscious. Fleeting, dreamlike memories of a giant floating eye flashed in his brain for a moment, but Chet, distracted with his current predicament, barely gave them a passing cognitive notice. He grabbed his rifle and, checking to make sure it was still loaded, pulled the bolt backward, sending a bullet rocketing out and into the thick layer of pine needles on the ground. Cursing his luck at having to bend over once more, he retrieved the bullet and placed it into the gun's magazine, groaning in pain.
"I'm useless. Worse than useless,"
Chet thought, caught between going back and pressing forward. But most of the townsfolk that would be woken from their slumber would be useless at this time of night, and worse, would be vulnerable to whatever was out there in the woods. Most of the folk never ventured into the woods, and if they did so sparingly and quickly, to gather kindling for fires or to harvest the blueberries which grew in abundance in their season.
"If I go back, it'll take time," Chet thought. "If I go back, no saying whether or not they'll come, whether they'll choose to go in the woods this time of night or wait for morning."
A thought wriggled its way through the adrenaline, through the haze of Mothsbane. A thought which surfaced, finally, inevitably.
"He's not my kid. He's not my grandkid. None of them are. I could fucking die out here. Muties and free gatherers besides, I could fall in a fucking ditch and just break my neck quick as that. Shit."
But a guilt welled in him, sticky and noxious. He could do it. He could go back. Tell the people what he knew, get patched up. Fuck it after that. He didn't need to personally rescue this kid. He'd been attacked twice already. Once by some feral freak of nature, nay, of artifice, and attacked once again by an unseen assailant. Trying to clearly recall the moment up until he had blacked out was frustrating and fruitless, Chet realized. He wondered if it was temporary amnesia from the blow, and put the hand not holding the rifle under his hat, jostling it about, feeling for bumps or pain, and finding nothing.
"The Mothsbane," he said, remembering his attempts to alleviate the pain of his broken ribs, one puff at a time.
The Mothsbane must have been dirty, Chet decided, laced with something else, poisoned or spiked. There was no assailant. Nobody had knocked him out. He had merely imbibed too much out of pain and fear and passed out. It had been years since he had allowed Ma Fixin to give him a physical, though he probably needed it now more than ever in his growing years.
"High blood pressure, or cholesterol or something,"
Chet thought, trying in vain to reassure himself, to convince himself. But he was unable to hold on to the belief that it had all been just a pipe dream. Something was wrong. And if he decided to go back now, the blood of innocence may essentially be in his hands. If he pressed on and wasted time, they might never find the missing children, or the predator who had seized them, and it could continue, Chet knew, because it had not stopped yet, and there were still youngins in the town.
"Who the fuck are you?"
he screamed into the wilder, veins bulging in his throat, whites of his eyes showing. Chet began to breathe heavily, his pulse quickened, and the rage he felt at the invasiveness, at the atrocity that was occurring in his town, being inflicted upon his people.
"I'm coming for you. I'm gonna gut you. I'm gonna snap your fucking fingers and peel your eyes while they're still in your head. I'm coming for you, motherfucker."
Rifle in hand, Chet started forward, slowly at first, then more quickly, until he was jogging. The pain was immense, but the rage was overpowering. He meant every word that he said, and intended to make do. The fact that he was half out of his mind with juxtapositional emotions, motivations, and neurochemicals did not occur to him, as it does not to most in a similar state. Chet searched the ground quickly, scanning for signs of human passing, found a broken twig low to the ground. Moments later, a bent fern.
"Yes!"
Chet growled, pushing aside the gnawing sense that it was a delusion, that he was following some forest animal away from the true path. When he saw a small human footprint, bare and pressed into a bit of moist dirt, his heart skipped a beat. He was on the path. Jogging more quickly now, despite the agony racking his body, despite the grinding sensation of bone on bone, another footprint was spotted, and Chet followed the direction the miniature toes pointed, breathing heavily and soaked with sweat. Chet sank into himself, retracting from the world, disassociating from the sensations his body was inflicting upon him, until he heard a noise, over the sounds of his heartbeat, over the sounds of his boots. A child's murmured yelling, and an adult voice making shushing noises. Chet quickly ground to a halt, whipping off his hat with a hand and pressing the light against his body, listening carefully to the continuing human noise coming from the darkness, stepping carefully and scanning for any signs of light, which he was rewarded for, spotting a dim glimmer of crackling firelight in the distance. Chet held his hat and the light attached to it, close to the ground, terrified of snapping a branch underfoot or giving his position away, hoping that the campfire would blind whoever was next to it, hoping that they could not see. When he came within 30 feet of the fire, Chet could make out the figure of a very small child, sitting on the ground cross-legged, with his face covered by a cloth sack and hands behind his back, almost certainly bound. Also next to the fire was a stooped figure, who fiddled with the fire, poking at it with a stick. Chet raised the rifle and aimed its long barrel towards the center of the kidnapper's back, put his finger on the trigger, pulling slowly and firmly so as not to misdirect the gun towards his right side. He fired. The forest filled with a cacophonous booming. Birds shrieked and flew away. The person he had shot had fallen face first into the ground, and Chet rushed out to the child. He pulled the child up roughly by the arm, bringing the tiny person to his feet, and snatched the hood off of Isaac's head. Seeing the little boy's puffy cheeks and eyes red with tears, and mouth bound with a strip of cloth, his little wrists bound with rope, and Chet began to frantically untie him, first freeing Isaac's mouth, letting the boy wail and resume his sobs, and then his wrists. The boy grasped both hands together and continued to cry, unsure of what exactly was going on. Chet stooped down and looked the kid in the eyes, trying to soothe him with soft hushes, to no avail.
Shh, boy, it's okay, you're safe, shh. We're going to go back to your sister's now. We're going to get you to Sarah. Shh, come on, you're okay, the bad man is gone.
Despite his attempts, young Isaac Scriven continued to cry, and Chet turned to face the person he had shot. But they were gone. Not only was the body missing, but the blood was nowhere to be seen, nor any disturbance where the body had fallen. Chet rose up and shouldered his rifle, searching around frantically for his foe, letting the boy weep. Chet turned in a way that ground his rib into his guts, and he yelped and dropped his rifle, trying to straighten. But the pain did not cease and only intensified. Chet glanced down at his abdomen and saw a rib jutting through the skin, pouring blood onto the ground. Isaac's voice behind him caused him to spin again, and this time Chet was doubled over by his wounds, forced to look up at Isaac at eye level, and Chet saw that the boy was smiling, a wide, toothy smile, as if the boy had already grown in all of his adult teeth, giving the child a predatory, shark-like visage. Without a word, the boy put the strip of cloth back into his mouth, sat back down, put the bag over his head and his hands behind his back. Chet heard leaves crunch behind him, but was unable to turn and face whatever had caused the noise. Blood seeped between his fingers, and he tried to staunch the flow. He heard a voice, amplified by righteous fury, from where the leaves had crunched.
"I'm gonna gut you,"
Chet heard the person take another step.
"I'm gonna snap your fucking fingers."
The voice was just behind him now.
"And I'm gonna peel your eyes while they are still in your head."
A hand seized Chet's face and turned it upward into the side, and Chet saw who it was, looming above him. It was himself. Chet saw his own face grinning down at him, pushbroom mustache prominent on its lip. The discarded knife he had left in a mutie was held in the doppelganger's hand, point down.
"And then I'm going to go back to town and confess the crime to everybody. And I'm going to show them where the body is buried. And your daughter and grandchildren will know what their grandpa did to a poor, sweet, innocent boy. To all the children."
From beneath the bag, Isaac giggled. Then Chet woke up, his back to the damp, cool forest floor of the wilder. The memories of his tracking and searching rushed back to him, and he sat up in a hurry, which caused him to fall back to the ground, his ribs shooting pain through his entire body. Carefully now, he managed to rise, getting back on his feet, knowing that he had encountered... what? A person? An enemy? Someone, he felt sure. But who? He could not tell. The flashlight he had secured to his hat was still active, shining its dull red beams up into the trees. It had become disheveled in his fall. Chet adjusted it into a more useful position and looked around for his rifle, sure that whoever had jumped him must have stolen it. Some free gatherer who had wandered too close to town and seen an opportunity, Chet wanted to believe it was not the kidnapper. This has been The Witch Doctor, Episode 20, Mare, by Equanimous Rex. Thank you for listening and stay tuned for future episodes. Music attribution. The intro is Come Play With Me by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. The outro is Iron Horse, also by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. Both of the songs are licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license.